It's time for Conversations with MIT Medical, care for the community. Here's your host, Melanie Cole.
On February 1st, the World Health Organization took the rare step of declaring an international public health emergency in connection with the spread of the Zika virus in the Americas. Over the last year, the mosquito-borne illness has become epidemic throughout the Caribbean and in many parts of Latin America. My guests today are Dr. Cecilia Stuopis. She is an obstetrician-gynecologist and the medical director at MIT Medical. And Dr. Howard Heller. He is an infectious disease specialist and the associate medical director at MIT Medical. Dr. Heller, I'd like to start with you. Tell the listeners, what is the Zika virus and how is it spread?
It's a virus that's transmitted to humans primarily by mosquitoes. There have been some cases reported of transmission through blood transfusions, and we're seeing more cases that are transmitted sexually from men to women. So far, there have not been any documented cases of sexual transmission from women to men, but that is a possibility. And what we do know is that the virus can persist in semen for up to 2 months after a man has been infected.
How would you even know if you've been infected? If you are in one of the affected areas, people get bit by mosquitoes all the time, Dr. Heller. Are there some symptoms you'd like us to look for?
So most people who get Zika actually don't develop symptoms or are so mild that they don't even notice them. The ones who do get symptomatic, it's usually with fever, rash, sometimes joint pains, and sometimes conjunctivitis, inflammation of the eyes. The symptoms tend to start within a few days or a week after the infection happens or after the mosquito bite. Some of the symptoms are very similar to other mosquito-transmitted infections, like dengue fever and another one called chikungunya fever.
Dr. Stuopis, they've put out this alert and for women of childbearing age and pregnant women specifically. Tell us why that is.
So Zika virus is significant for pregnant women because there's been an association that has been seen in areas of the world where we're seeing the Zika virus outbreak most prominently, that infants born to those pregnant women who have been affected with Zika have a condition called microcephaly, which is a congenital condition that a child is born with. And essentially what that means, the word microcephaly means a small head. And the small head, we think, is a result of transmission of the Zika virus from the infected mother to her growing baby. And what it does is affect the neurological tissues of the baby, specifically the brain, and causes it not to grow properly. So when the baby is then born, whether at full term or otherwise, the head is smaller than it is expected to be. And when the brain doesn't develop correctly, there's also a concern for neurological problems, cognitive issues, and it's a lifelong condition.
Does it matter, Dr. Stuopis, when a woman who's pregnant gets bit by one of these mosquitoes during her pregnancy? Is there a certain time it's more risky than others?
So Zika virus could really affect the growing baby at almost any time during the pregnancy gestation. Obviously, I think the further along the woman is, closer to delivery, if she were to get infected, there would be less time, theoretically, for the virus to infect the baby. But for the most part, we are considering it a problem for women during pregnancy, really at all stages.
Dr. Heller, is there a vaccine for this virus?
There is no vaccine available now.
So where have you seen the outbreaks of the virus occur the most? I mean, they've put so many on this list now, but where have you seen and heard about?
Yeah, it's spread pretty rapidly. It had been reported in other parts of the world over the past several years, but the current big outbreak was first reported from Brazil, and it now has spread to many countries in the Caribbean, in Central America, and in South America. In the United States, it's been found in some of the U.S. territories, in Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, and Samoa, so far not on the mainland United States. I always advise people to check the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control website, if you're traveling, because it's continuing to spread through many different countries, and they keep the list updated all the time. It's important also to note that even though it has been found in certain countries, it does not necessarily occur in all areas of the country. For example, in Colombia, in South America, At the very high altitudes, like the city Bogota, which is at a high level, mosquitoes are not going to be existing at levels over 6,500 feet. So even though Colombia is a country that has had Zika, it doesn't mean that it's going to be found at the high elevations. The same thing with Mexico. It has been found in some parts of Mexico, but not in Mexico City, which is at a higher altitude.
Okay, Dr. Stuopis, what advice would you give to women who are pregnant or planning to become pregnant? And if they are pregnant now but weren't when they visited one of these countries, what do you tell them?
So let's start first with women who are not pregnant but could become pregnant. Right now, we are recommending that women who are traveling to these areas where Zika is being transmitted, we are recommending to them that they use effective contraception to prevent pregnancy in the event that they were to become infected with the Zika virus. So really to make an informed decision to actively prevent pregnancy while they're traveling in these areas if they do not, in fact, want to be pregnant. For other women who may desire pregnancy, we're also talking with them about preventing pregnancy if they've been to one of these or plan to go to one of these areas where the Zika virus is prevalent, because it appears that the risks are quite great, that it may not be worth it to take that on. So we are recommending to them to delay their childbearing intentions if they, in fact, are traveling to these areas. And then for women who are currently pregnant, we're really taking an aggressive approach in that we are asking all pregnant women about their recent travel, if they've been to one of these areas. And any woman who has traveled to one of these areas, we are going to test for the Zika presence of the Zika virus. And then additionally to that, there's a series of ultrasounds that are recommended for women who just to look for the microcephaly condition, because we can diagnose that on ultrasound.
Dr. Heller, can condoms protect someone from contracting? We've heard in the media that now it has been found that it can be contracted through sexual intercourse. So is there a protection for this?
Condoms will reduce the risk of transmission, and the condoms are recommended for not just vaginal sex, but also for oral sex and for anal sex. We don't know for sure, but other viruses that can be transmitted vaginally can also be transmitted through other methods. So for now, we're recommending condom use for all types of sex. And it's important for women who might become pregnant, not just to remind them about the precautions if they themselves are going to be traveling, but if their sexual partners are going to be traveling to Zika-affected countries, their partners might be coming back with Zika. And remember, most people who get Zika don't get symptoms or get very mild symptoms. They don't know they were sick. So if somebody's sexual partner is coming back from a Zika country, they should use condoms for sexual intercourse and avoid becoming pregnant if possible for at least a few months afterwards.
So I think the key thing here around prevention is also just, you know, the key thing is to prevent mosquito bite in the first place. So in terms of avoiding exposure, in addition to sort of using contraceptives to avoid pregnancy, women who are thinking about pregnancy should avoid traveling to those areas altogether. And then while if they were to be in one of those countries, you know, all people really should be taking measures to prevent infection by the getting mosquito bites, and that's through, you know, using long-sleeved clothes, you know, keeping their skin unexposed, staying in air-conditioned or screened-in areas, and using approved bug sprays that contain DEET to prevent those mosquito bites in the first place.
Such an important point. Thank you so much. And Dr. Heller, do you recommend that if somebody was in one of those affected areas, when they come back, do you recommend that they just go ahead and get tested?
Right now, testing availability is somewhat limited. It's only available through the CDC. And for right now, because the resources are more limited, they are limiting testing to people who have just come back from those affected countries and who are having symptoms of fever, rash, things like that. Those people will be tested. And women who are pregnant, who potentially could have been infected in one of the countries, they will test them also. But for people who are not pregnant, people who are not having symptoms, the test is just not currently available.
Dr. Stuopis, if someone returns from an affected country, but they experience no symptoms, what is that period where they can say, okay, I don't think I came up with it, or I'm not going to infect anybody else?
So I think we can't say that, just as Dr. Heller mentioned, because so many of the people who are infected, in fact, do not have symptoms. We really can't say for certainty whether somebody has or has not been infected. I think we would feel confident after, if it's been, if we don't see the antibody in the person's blood after they've been tested and it's been 2 to 4 weeks after their potential exposure and they're not, you know, in a sexual relationship with somebody who else who's been exposed. If they continue to be negative, then we would not be so worried about it. But really, we can't go by the symptoms at all. So
right now, we know that male-to-female transmission sexually can happen for up to 2 months afterwards. It's possible that it's even longer. So I would counsel people that at a very minimum, avoiding pregnancy or sexual contact for at least 2 months afterwards. Hopefully, once the antibody test is more readily available, and so we're able to screen people who have not even had symptoms, we'll be able to counsel people more directly. Also, they're investigating very intensely right now how long is the virus able to persist in women and in both the secretions of both men and women. And hopefully we're going to have a lot more information about that in the next few months.
Is there any risk, Dr. Heller, to women who are not of childbearing age or who are not pregnant, to infants and to the elderly, to people that are not pregnant women?
In general, it actually causes a relatively mild disease, generally much less severe than dengue fever or chikungunya fever. The exception is a neurologic condition called Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a very severe neurologic disease that potentially could be fatal. And there have been reports of Zika causing Guillain-Barré syndrome. This neurologic condition is not unique to Zika. We see it even with influenza. But it appears that Zika is one of the viruses that has a higher likelihood of causing Guillain-Barré syndrome. So even for people who are not pregnant or becoming pregnant, and even though Zika usually is a pretty mild disease, we still need to take precautions. And I always emphasize that even though Zika is in the news a lot lately, the other reasons for trying to protect yourself against the mosquitoes is for the other diseases, dengue and chikungunya, which potentially could be even more severe.
Dr. Stuopas, I'm giving you the last word. Please give your best advice to the listeners about not panicking about Zika, what you would tell them if they asked you, and does MIT have any specific travel restrictions that you would like to speak about?
So I think the best advice is a message of prevention, and that is preventing the exposure in the first place by limiting travel to the affected areas if you can do that. And if you do have to travel to those areas, preventing those mosquito bites if you can do that. As well as making sure that you tell your healthcare providers if you have traveled to one of these areas that may be relevant to what they're considering for testing and evaluation of you.
And I'd like to add that MIT does have a travel risk policy. Details are available on the MIT travel webpage. They categorize different countries either as extreme or high or moderate risk travel. And right now, the countries that are affected by Zika are categorized as moderate risk. So the MIT in general urges all members of the MIT community to check the travel warnings, ideally not to travel to countries that are at moderate or high risk. For students who are traveling to countries that are at any risk, whether it's extreme, high, or moderate, they're actually required to sign a form. It's called the graduate and undergraduate student travel form, and this in which they acknowledge that they're going to a country that does have some risk associated with it. All of this information is available on the MIT travel page.
Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us. It's great and such important information. You're listening to Conversations with MIT Medical. And for more information, you can go to medical.mit.edu. That's medical.mit.edu. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.